morning to everybody, and just welcome you again to our service here at C3 Fremantle. This morning we're beginning a new series, and this series is essentially coming out of this book here, The Bait of Satan. And The Bait of Satan, very good book. And over the next few weeks, you're going to have other speakers that are going to come forth and are going to just espouse some things, some wisdom that comes out of this book. And I would really ask that over the next little bit of time as we go through this book, there's also going to be a Connect Group guide that we're going to be going through as a church together in our Connect Groups. I would ask that you don't run from this. I would ask that you don't run from the things that the Lord is going to start putting some pressure on, on some things in your lives. And I would ask that just sort of like say, Lord, help me. Keep applying that pressure. The Lord does that so that he can begin to deal with some things that are stopping you from living in the fullness of what God has for you. And so in a world marked by unprecedented, we've got technological advancement and we've got limitless opportunities, it seems. We may assume that our generation is destined for unparalleled prosperity and fulfillment. But beneath the surface of progress lies a pervasive sense of hurt and brokenness that plagues the fabric of our society. We are the hurt generation, grappling with the aftermath of shattered relationships, rampant addictive behaviors, and a profound sense of internal turmoil. If you consider the prevalence of addictive practices such as substance abuse and alcoholism that have become all too familiar in our communities, you see, some of these things, they start off nice. There is an allure of temporary escape. If you get into some drugs, if you get into a bit of alcohol, it gives you the temporary escape. The problem, though, it goes from temporary escape to the grip of dependency. And sometimes we find solace in destructive habits that only serve to deepen the wounds that we carry. Because I have never heard anybody say that my life got better the day I started drinking. What drives individuals to seek refuge in substances that offer fleeting relief but leave lasting scars on their well-being? The cycle of broken relationships as wounded individuals raise the next generation, passing on their unhealed traumas and unresolved pain. How can we expect to foster healthy communities and nurturing environments when we ourselves as individuals are struggling to cope with the weight of our past experiences? There's something more insidious that lurks within us. The seeds of offense and bitterness that take root in our hearts. How often do we find ourselves holding or nursing grudges, harboring resentment, and clinging to past relationships or to past hurts like a cherished possession? This toxic cocktail of anger and bitterness that begins to rise in our life poisons our relationships, distorts our perception, so that even when somebody says something nice to you, you will always perceive it in a negative way. And sometimes what this happens, you see, is that it blinds us to the beauty of forgiveness and healing in our lives. We're going to begin to explore offense and bitterness in our lives. We'll uncover the roots of our collective pain, confront the destructive patterns that hold us captive. And we're going to embark on a journey towards liberation and wholeness so that we are not people that imagine healing, imagine freedom. You know, we don't have to be in prison to be in prison. We don't have to be in prison to be in prison, because as we walk daily, because of the things that have happened in our lives, the offense that is in our lives, we find ourselves in prisons and asking ourselves, can I ever be free from the things that have happened to me? As we confront these inner demons, we want to break free from the chains of hurt that bind us, and we embrace a future defined by compassion and renewal in our lives. There was a time it happened, and if somebody that I don't know comes to me and says some bad things about me, I'm not really going to care, because they really don't know me and I don't know them. It is more hurtful when the people that are supposed to be the ones that are closest to you, that do stuff, that betray you, for instance, that it stings a bit more, because there is an expectation that we carry that because you are close to me, you cannot, you shouldn't do stuff. This is why you find that the, as Miss Catherine is playing, she's a lawyer, you find that the bitter stuff in law happens in the family courts. Because it's once people that professed a certain amount of love for each other and did things for each other that now, when expectations have been broken, there is a bitterness that begins to rise up, and it can get really, really bad. And so an opportunity arose where some people that were very close to me, in fact, let me say this. The Lord has been speaking to me now, I know. I know this. The Lord has been speaking to me from a few weeks back about, and normally the Lord would speak to me through dreams, and so I have some dreams and I wake up and thinking, oh goodness, this doesn't make sense. And I think the Lord 2 weeks ago put a plug on something and said, there's an issue there. You know, you're dealing with some rejection issues. And I thought, oh, okay, that's interesting. Anyway, and then this morning, I had the same dream again. And so I'm there thinking, Lord, here, I'm talking about offense. You know, it's not really about me. It's about other people. But I embraced what the Lord was saying. I said, all right, Lord, let's get to work. I really took my time this morning. And I don't know. You know, there is something about the offense that comes by rejection that is so dangerous to you and I, that if it's not dealt with, what happens is that it begins to permeate every area of our lives. It permeates the things that we do, the things that we chase after, to dull the pain that we feel that comes from rejection. And so knowing that now, about 6 years ago, an opportunity arose. So here I've spoken about rejection here and the offense that comes from that. And so 6 years ago, another situation happened with those that were close to me that I think, you know what, these are people I'm riding with. And I recall I was sent many messages over the phone. Voice notes. You know, people send voice notes. Everybody know voice notes? People speaking to the phone and I hate voice notes. Don't send me one, because I tend not to listen to them. That's why I tell a lot of people, don't send me, just text me what you're saying. Anyway, they sent me, these were some of the most harshest things. And this is, I hate you. Who do you think you are? You're this and that, da 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 da. And there were so many of them. Now, normally, I'm the type of person, well, I was, the type of person that I'm like an elephant. I don't forget. And I just harbor things, and I keep them in, and I keep score. So I learned in that moment I had a choice, and these were many. And the stuff they were saying, very hurtful, lots of them, they're about 20-odd. Voice notes, boom, 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 and they'll just pop it up from everywhere. These are people that are dear to me. And I made a choice in that moment to say, I'm going to delete these voice notes so that I don't have the opportunity to go back and listen to them and then get myself really riled up because of the things that they might have said towards me. We're going to navigate the treacherous terrain of our wounded hearts, unravel the complexities of our shared struggles, and we're going to illuminate the path towards healing and redemption in the midst of a world fractured by what I have called the legacy of the hurt generation. Offense is very insidious. It proceeds in a gradual, subtle way, but with very harmful effects. In fact, it's something that cannot be avoided in our lives. If you have not been offended, I got good news for you. The opportunity to be offended is coming. And remember, I've said here, I've used the word the opportunity, because it's either you take it or you don't. You have a choice. It's an opportunity to be offended. Please put your hands together for Ms. Catherine. Thank you, Catherine. Hebrews 12, verse 14 to 15 in the Passion Translation says, in every relationship, be swift to choose peace over competition and run swiftly toward holiness. For those who are not holy will not see the Lord. Watch over each other to make sure that no one misses the revelation of God's grace. And then he says, and make sure no one lives with a root of bitterness sprouting within them, which will only cause trouble and poison the hearts of many. In the New Living Translation, it says, work at living in peace with everyone. Who knows, that is a very difficult thing to do. You know, oh, okay. And and work at living a holy life. For those who are not holy will not see the Lord. Look after each other so that none of you fails to receive the grace of God. Then it says this question, watch out that no poisonous root of bitterness grows up to trouble you, corrupting many. Matthew 24 says, and then shall many be offended and shall betray one another and shall hate one another. And many false prophets shall rise and shall deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations. And then the end shall come. Luke 17 verse 1 says, then he said unto the disciples, it is impossible, but that offenses will come. We will be offended in this life, whether we like it or not. The Greek word interpreted in other scriptures, temptations to sin or offenses or stumbling blocks, is scandala, and it refers to a snare or a trap that brings a person into error or sin. So it's a trap that has been set. And you see, it's so subtle that sometimes we don't know that, well, the mere purpose of a trap is that the person who is being trapped does not understand that you are actually being what? Trapped. And so there you go. You go there to grab a bit of the seeds, if you're a bird, I guess. You get a bit of the seeds and you go in to peck on them, not knowing that a trap has been laid out for you. This is the thing, what happens when opportunity comes our way. So not offense. When offense comes our way, that it's an opportunity for us to either walk away from or we dive into it, and the consequences and the roots of bitterness and the fruits of bitterness that it develops in our lives. Where is the genesis of the root of bitterness? When bitterness, Greg Hekyla says, when bitterness is allowed to develop in the heart, the end result is defilement. Bitterness and genuine gratitude to God cannot coexist. What is the root of bitterness, and how does this root find lodging in our hearts and lives? A bitter person is generally someone who has been hurt. Something has happened. Life has not worked out to their satisfaction. You thought you were going to be this by this age. You thought you were going to have done that or this. You had great dreams, and all those dreams evaporated. And then you're not happy with life, and you become cynical, and really your outlook in life becomes very pessimistic. We sometimes blame God and say, Lord, it is your fault that things are this way. And then we become bitter. We can be bitter at a spouse that has left us, and we say, well, I could have been over there, but because of what you did, I'm now over here. It is your fault. It could have been my parents. They dropped you when you were young, and you think, well, you know, you didn't do so well in life, and so you blame the parents. We blame somebody for some things that have occurred in our lives. Bitterness involves anger and hostility. As bitter people, we may feel we've been hurt, misused, and abused. And yes, a lot of those things could have happened where it was either the hurt was intentional, unintentional, or imagined. And so if I'm a bitter person, we don't deal with the problem. We internalize it. We dwell on it. We mull over and over and over. How could they do this to me? Up until there's this genuine dislike and disdain for somebody. We then begin to seek out the other person's faults, and we begin to justify our feelings. We become negative, and we pick out the flaws in our family, in our friends, in the church, and in co-workers. Am I describing somebody you know? Don't look to the side. Look straight ahead. A bitter person may imagine or misconstrue things. And I believe that it takes the passage of time for you to actually understand, for you to see things differently, because your perspective changes. Somebody once asked me, I didn't think this person liked me, and I was probably a 6-7-year-old child. They said, was at a party. So everybody's at a party, they're enjoying themselves. You know what kids are like. And then dessert time, everybody wants to have ice cream. And so, you know, we get our first helping. Ooh, yeah, very nice. And then, of course, it comes to, you know, kids, they always want the second and possibly third helping. And so people saying, oh, so we want ice cream, we want ice cream. And then the question was asked, do you want ice cream? Now, I guess with a bit of history with that individual, my only response was, no, I don't want ice cream. The problem is that it was a question that was asked. I perceived it at that time like this individual did not really want me to have ice cream. So the way they asked the question wasn't as if, I want to give you ice cream. It was like, no, you're not having ice cream. That's how now, 7-year-old Steve Mugwenzi recorded it as they really didn't want me to have ice cream. So for many years, I never ate ice cream. Because that scarred me. Just that encounter. It was done, it was said in such a way that I felt at that time that you know it when somebody says is giving you something and they really don't want to give you something. And they ask it in such a way that you're not having ice cream. Because you can read the body language. Which means that kids are very good at reading. We're all good at reading body language. Here, take this 50. You're not really genuine about giving them. They can tell that you're really ticked off about giving them stuff. But with the passage of time and a bit of growth, I said, you know what? Maybe I might have interpreted that situation wrong. I don't know. But this is what happens, you see, when we imagine or misconstrue things. Now I have an idea about an event or about somebody that maybe was never there in the first place. Another way that you know that you have a root or you have an offense, because what happens is when you are offended, then the root of bitterness begins to develop. One way you know you have a root, you have offense in your life and a root of bitterness, is that the moment you meet somebody, hi, my name is Stephen Magwenzi, and so I'm interacting with Charlie here, with Pastor Charlie, and he says, hi, I'm Charlie, da-da-da-da, and all of a sudden I just begin, oh, you know, when I was 5 years old, they didn't give me ice cream. That's the first thing that I say. I always relate everything to the event that occurred in my life. I am quick to just let everybody know my life story and all the bad stuff that has happened to me. And when I was at school, somebody made fun of me. And so you're quick to explain the hurt that is in your life. We narrate that automatically because it's something that tells us that there's something that has not been what? Dealt with. It's a wound that has not been healed. Because who knows that when you hate somebody, who's ever hated somebody in here? Raise your hands if you ever hated somebody. Just a few people. Yeah, that's good. It's a church. Yes. You know. Now, for some of us, the real Christians, you know, who've hated a few people, or maybe still do, I don't know. The mere mention of somebody's name, you're talking about somebody, I'm talking to Charlie about somebody, and the mere mention, all of a sudden, my body language changes. And my brow is furrowed because I'm just ticked. Just talking about the person, I am angry. That tells you that there are some issues that have not been dealt with. And at times, it's not possible to know that you're offended or carrying bitterness in your life until the Holy Spirit reveals things to you. I never knew that I had some issues with my mother. And God bless her, she's late now, very late. She's been dead 20-something years. I had dreams for 10 consecutive years. I think I've mentioned this before. I had dreams. And in that dream, I just had this hatred towards somebody, which wasn't the reality. Now, let's just, I'll pick Shirash. I hated Shirash in my dreams. Hated him. Really badly. But I thought, I like Shirash. How can that be real? I like Shirash. Until, well, the real person I hated in my dreams was my wife. Couldn't stand her in my dreams. And I'm saying in my dreams. But when I woke up, I said to myself, this does not compute. Because in my waking hours, I like this person. And then one time we had a disagreement. And we had a disagreement. It was over the children. As all parents, you know, go back and forth over the kids. And so in the nighttime, I said, you know what? The problem with you, whoever says something to their spouse and starts, the problem with you is this. You know? Yeah, so that's the best way to start a conversation, you know. So the problem with you is that you never defend me in front of the children. Go to bed. Same dream again, except this time I see my mother. And those same words were uttered in the dream. And that's when I realized, okay, this is the person that I have some issues with. And so I'm saying that there are some things that would take the Holy Spirit to reveal. The problem, you see, what happens is offenses not dealt with will result in the fruit of bitterness in your life. Emotionally, psychologically, the moment you start hating someone, you become a slave to every person on whom you pour the vials of your wrath. They control your thoughts. They hound you wherever you go. any root of bitterness that is not dealt with creates the fruit of bitterness. Offense that results from rejection may lead you to filling your life with vices that will fill the void created. You might start drinking a bit, snorting a bit, watching a bit of this and that, just so that you don't feel rejected. Because let's just say, you know, the alcohol never says stop drinking. In fact, what it says is that have some more. The pornography, they don't reject you. Basically, what they say is, hey, keep going. They're accepting. And so you recognize, you see, that offenses that result from rejection will cause us to fill our lives with stuff. So we substitute whatever it's the alcohol, the pornography, the relationships, because we're just trying to fill a void. Other fruits of bitterness are anger, always blaming someone else, never being at fault, always being defensive, being explosive. I recognized that there was something, you know, when the Lord revealed it to me, when I mean, my mother, God bless her, wonderful. Goodness, she had a sharp tongue. And she would, bam! Anybody with a sharp tongue that they don't miss. You know, like that whip. You go to those cowboy shows and they go, bam! She was like that with her tongue. And I started to be like that. Until one day, just, you know, you let the tongue out and give somebody a smack. And the Lord just says, ooh, the thought just like you're being like your mother. Oh, man, that cut me deep. That really hurt me. But I recognized that all I was doing was repeating what was done to me, because I never had the opportunity to deal with the impacts of what was done to me. For many years, I never could. It's only about 3 odd years ago when I turned, I don't know, 45 or 44. No, it must have been last year when I turned 45. Or the year before, whenever. No, it was 2 years ago. I'm an accountant, so I need to be exact with, you know. So I need to be exact, you know. And I recall I picked up a book and I said, you know what, I'm going to read this book. And out of there dropped a passport-sized photo of my mother. And for the first time in the 20-odd-something years, I said, you know what, I miss my mother. I never could say it before because there were just issues there. What happens when we don't deal with stuff, with offenses in our lives, we repeat them. And they come out explosive at the people that we care for. We are abrasive. What we then tend to do is that in order to protect ourselves, we create, I've created, I had this. You know when you learn, there's these things called learning mechanisms, because you're learning to cope with stuff, and so you create a force field around you, a barrier. I had people that were in my inner circle and my outer circle, although that is healthy. It did not take much for you to be kicked out of the inner circle. You're out, and I don't want to see you. I don't know how many friendships I had. This guy, we were close. We were close. What then happened is that we were very close, real cool friends. Then some person I was dating said something that he said to her, and from there, and then somebody else said the same thing, boom, cut, gone, out of the circle, never to be seen again, excommunicated. But when I look back now at the regret of what if I had gone and said, hey, I heard you said this, what's up? And I never. And the funny thing is that the passage of time is gone. It's too late. This is the fruit of bitterness and the destruction that it brings to our lives, to our relationships. And so what is the solution? The Holy Spirit of God must perform radical surgery in our hearts. You know, he must reveal, like Gary Hakala says, he must reveal.